plate a potential nugget.
And you talk about tennis, right? You talk about how Brad Gilbert helped turn Andre Agassi around. And, I love that. I love the way you connect the dots. I was more of a Sampras fan, to be honest, than an Agassi fan.
Oh, no, don't tell me that.
but I think the metaphor was fascinating. So I'd love for you to just maybe connect the dots for us here.
Yeah, I'd love to tell that story. We've been talking sort of at a million miles in the sky, but getting into some of the stories that make the book hopefully fun to read, not just practically useful, is one of my great pleasures. So it was so fun to write this opening story for the book to help make the point about how important it is to match our solution to the obstacle we face. And I should say, so this, I chose the story about Andre Agassi. And I did agonize. This was the last part of the book I wrote. And I ripped up many previous drafts with different stories. It was particularly fun because I'm a tennis player in a former life. I was a very serious competitive tennis player as a junior. And I played in college. So it was near and dear to my heart. But Agassi, for those listeners who might not be familiar with him, was one of the greats, great tennis players, played in the 1990s. Was number one in the world for about 100 weeks over the course of his career, many Grand Slams to his name. But what's interesting about Agassi is he got off to a really rocky start. There were other rocky periods too, actually. He had a lot of bumps, but his start was particularly bumpy. And he was this sort of phenom in the United States. Everyone expected great things because he had been a junior star. And actually, he grew up with other famous tennis players you might know, like you mentioned Pete Sampras. They were, around the same age. Jim Courier is another name that might be familiar to some people. Yes. Michael Chang. So all these players sort of came up as juniors, and everyone thought Agassi was the most talented. He looked like he had the most promise. And in the early 1990s, despite that, these other guys were winning Grand Slams, were ranked one in the world, and he was really struggling. He was well known. His name was, he'd gotten a lot of endorsements because he wore flashy clothes and he,
you couldn't miss him on the court, shall we say.
Right. He had crazy hair. He wore ripped jeans. He wore lipstick to a tournament once. He was this really flashy guy. So, people knew who he was, but he wasn't doing well. And in the early 90s, he had a real low point when he was ranked about 30th in the world. His coach of a decade just left him unceremoniously. And he just, he was floundering. It was totally unclear how he was going to recover, if he was ever going to have much of a career to speak of. And he had this really important dinner arranged by his manager with Brad Gilbert that turned everything around. This is sort of why it's How to Change, and it fits so nicely with the book. And the point of changing is this moment. So Brad Gilbert was also a pro player at the time. He'd written a best-selling book called Winning Ugly that had been a New York Times bestseller earlier in the year. They sat down and Agassi's asking Brad Gilbert for advice on his game. Like, how do I turn it around? And sort of trying to figure out, would he be a good coach for him? And Gilbert basically tells Agassi he's been playing the sport wrong his whole life. And he has some credibility in saying this. Gilbert, even though he's not reputed to be naturally talented, had done incredibly well. He'd had this really successful career as a pro tennis player, often reaching further in tournaments than anyone thought he had any right to, given his natural ability. He was a strategic player. And he basically said to Agassi, look, if I had your talent, I would be number one in the world. You're doing it all wrong. You're going out on the court. You're trying to win every point with these flashy shots because you have so much talent. But you never think about who's on the opposite side of the court. And you never strategize and figure out, how do I let this person lose some points? How do I work their weaknesses? You're always trying to close and always trying to hit the big shot. And you're so good that you have gotten pretty far on that. But if you just played a strategic game, figured out how to tailor your approach to your opponent, you could be the best. And it was this sort of light bulb moment for Agassi based on, and by the way, I should say, Agassi wrote this amazing memoir called Open, which is the source material for this
story.
I loved
it. I love that book.
So good. I highly recommend it. That's how I learned the story and about this pivotal dinner. It changed Agassi's understanding of the game. He took Gilbert on as his coach, started playing completely differently. I mean, it took a little while to train that way, and he had amazing outcomes. He was entered the U.S. Open, which was one of the biggest tournaments of the year, one of the four Grand Slams, and he was unseeded, meaning no one thought he was going to perform well. He wasn't going to come in the top 16 was the expectation, and he actually won the tournament playing this completely different style, forcing his opponents to win rather than sort of losing himself by trying to go for all these perfect shots. He was extremely strategic, and he eventually actually in that same run reached number one in the world, a position that he went on to hold for a total of 100 weeks over his career. And again, there were more ups and downs, but that was a real turning point in the way he approached the game and completely changed the level he was able to rise to. And I think the key insight is exactly the insight that so many of us miss when it comes to behavior change. The way he changed his strategy of play was to become strategic instead of looking for the one size all fit, or excuse me, instead of looking for the one size fits all solution to tennis, he started tailoring. And it's exactly what I've seen works best for individuals and organizations trying to create change. There has to be an acknowledgement of what is the barrier and a strategic tailoring of the solution to that opponent that you're up against. And once that happens, your odds are much better, just as they are in tennis. So that's why I open with that story, that sort of metaphor, and hope it resonates with listeners.
Lovely, lovely. And as late Craig Christensen would say, one size fits nobody, right? Sometimes, you know, you might. So point well taken. I want to
change. And it's funny, yeah. In business, we think about strategy a lot. That's a great point. Clay Christensen, right, was a great strategic thinker, but we tend to think about it more at the organizational level. And I think that that very basic insight of how important it is to think about strategy is rarely applied to our personal lives, to our personal decision-making, to solving for change at the individual level. And that's kind of the key point at the heart of the book, is we get it in these other settings. We get it in sports, we get it in organizational strategy, but at the individual level, it's just as important.
This reminds me of an insight from Professor Tarun Khanna of Harvard Business School, who was on this podcast earlier. He spoke about how companies and individuals need to think about their strategy. He goes on to share some interesting insights around careers of the future and how they are likely to evolve. To tune into that wisdom, do go to playtopotential.com and find Tarun Khanna in the guest section. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.